It's the first presidential visit to Cuba in decades. Just ahead, what President Obama's trip to Havana and his address to the Cuban people means for Floridians wanting to travel to Cuba and do business there. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show now. Video on demand at tvjax.com and metrojacksonville.com. Just ahead, we will take your calls on the opening up of Cuba in the wake of the president's visit. What are your questions about that? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, timely tips for filing your taxes this season. Plus, we'll spotlight dreams come true and new music from our own David Luck and all of that ahead. But first this hour, as President Barack Obama wraps up his historic visit to Cuba, there's been a spike in interest in travel and business opportunities on the communist island nation, particularly right here in Florida. President Obama will address the Cuban people in a televised speech today. That is an historic event. As Havana's senior U.S. diplomat, John Caulfield is a former chief of mission with U.S. interest section in Cuba. He achieved agreements on immigration, environmental protection, and cultural exchange, and he championed the aspirations of ordinary Cubans to increase their political rights and economic opportunities. John Caulfield joins us now with his thoughts about our current relations with Cuba and where things may go from here. A pleasure to have you back on the program. We so welcome your expertise on this topic. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks very much, Melissa. Happy to be here.
And here's our question to callers. What is your reaction to President Barack Obama's trip to Cuba and his speech to the Cuban people on television later today? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. You can also weigh in on Facebook. And in a moment, we'll talk about what's happening in Havana today. But first, John Caulfield, what were your thoughts about what happened in Cuba yesterday when the president publicly held a question and answer session with Raul Castro? Your reaction?
Well, this has never been seen before in Cuba. First of all, that President Obama, at the end of the meeting with President Castro, went out to the press with President Castro, and that they both spoke publicly. And this was televised throughout Cuba. And you can bet that virtually every television set in Cuba was turned to that event. And then they saw the press corps ask questions for CNN, ask questions. And they were told that there would be only three questions, two for U.S. networks and one for the Cuban news organization. Well, of course, the U.S. correspondents each asked about six questions, including Jim Acosta from CNN, who asked Raul Castro in Spanish about political prisoners in Cuba. And Raul Castro responded quite agitated that, what political prisoners? If there are any, give me a list, and they'll be out of jail by this evening. Well, you can imagine that they've received a lot of lists.
right.
I think it would be really terrific if we do see some releases.
Now, Raul Castro all smiles as he greeted the president, but he is saying Cuba will not waver from its 57-year-old revolution. What are your thoughts about how the president's efforts to poke holes in the Cuban embargo, which is half a century now in place, how will that change the political landscape over time in Cuba, do you think?
Well, the U.S. has imposed these economic sanctions on Cuba in order to pressure the Cuban government to make exactly these types of political changes. And we've been doing that for over 50 years. And President Obama concluded, I think accurately, that it had not worked. And that in the meantime, the justification in Cuba for both the poor state of the economy and the need for repression was that the U.S. was threatening, it was subverting, it would invade. And so I think in the eyes of the ordinary Cubans, the justification for having a messed up economy and the justification for repressive measures are dramatically undercut when President Raul Castro welcomes President Obama to Cuba and is speaking to the Cuban people. And frankly, President Obama is very popular in Cuba.
Hmm. And if you're just tuning in, we want your calls, your questions, and your comments about the president's trip to Cuba. He will address the Cuban people in a televised speech in just about an hour. What are your thoughts about all this, and especially what this means for Florida? We'll go to the calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Now, John, and particularly in South Florida, the influential Cuban exile community is very divided on this visit. At the same time, we see yesterday Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz, a Cuban-American, tweeting out that freedom can come to Cuba, but it cannot happen by enriching and empowering the dictatorship. What are your thoughts about those who disagree with the visit, the presidential visit, and they think it sets a bad precedent?
Well, I mean, there's plenty of precedents of where, as President Obama said, we disagree with the internal policies of countries. We disagree with the way they treat their own citizens, and that's the case in Cuba. And this includes countries with whom we are friendly and countries with whom we have a working relationship but are not so friendly, like China or Vietnam. And so I think the president's point of view on this is that greater engagement with the U.S. at a minimum will improve the lives of ordinary Cubans. And if the complaint is that the leadership gets the lion's share, well, that certainly was true before. We know that the leadership in Cuba is going to be changing.
And do you see that happening sooner rather than later as the old guard dies off, frankly?
Well, the real political authority in Cuba lies in a small group of people who fought in the revolution, headed by Raul Castro. Of course, Fidel has passed from the scene for the most part. And these are the comandantes. There's only about five of them left in the government, but they are the gray eminences of Cuba. And they're all over 80. I mean, Raul is the youngest, and he's 84, mm-hmm. so they're not going to be there forever. The next tier of leadership is 30 years younger. Now, I'm not saying that they are not communists, but certainly they look at the world differently than my father and I looked at the world, and that, you know, we will see new ideas emerge in the future in Cuba.
At the same time, we're seeing everyone from the CEO of Marriott Hotels to other business leaders visiting Cuba as part of the president's historic trip to the island. It's the first visit by sitting U.S. president in nearly 90 years. The president's export council is coming along for this. They will be part of a summit on entrepreneurship in Cuba. As business really pushes for access to Cuba, in particular here in Florida, we've seen stark differences in how Florida cities are reacting to this. And I wanted to get your thoughts about that. For example, in Tampa and St. Pete, they are all in on getting on board with this opportunity in Cuba. Meanwhile, cities like Jacksonville have not jumped into the fray. Your thoughts about what this means for Florida?
Well, it is curious to see this, but I understand both the political and the emotional issues involved in this. But I would say that the status quo is not going to remain in Cuba. And it's really a question of, do you prepare yourself for that change when it comes ahead? And I think Jacksonville has a lot to gain as Cuba's economy opens and changes. We have been opening on our side, but really in Cuba, it's important that they open their economy, particularly to allow small businesses and to allow investment from overseas in those small businesses.
And isn't there a burgeoning business and middle class in Cuba? Admittedly, a lot smaller than other countries, yeah. But that's starting to happen.
Yeah, despite all obstacles, it is amazing to see how resourceful the Cubans are and how they're pushing the limits on what their government has prescribed. You can be self-employed in Cuba in a series of occupations, but you're not yet allowed to form companies. And yet, you see Cubans are forming companies, whether it's construction companies or textile companies or service companies, and this is being tolerated. So people are no longer as afraid as they were before of the government, and they push the limits.
Let's go to your calls right now. As we speak with Cuban expert John Caulfield about the president's historic trip to Cuba, he will address the Cuban people in a televised address in just under an hour. We'll carry that live on the radio here. Meanwhile, what are your thoughts about Cuba and Florida's impact on travel and business opportunities to Cuba. The number to join us, 549-2937. Josh is in Arlington this morning. Hi, Josh. Thanks for holding. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Love the show.
Thanks.
And real quick, yes, real quick, I just wanted to say I'm really proud of the president again. And that's my comment.
So you approve of this visit to Cuba by the president?
Yeah, that's right. It's
okay.
Huge.
All right. Thanks
huge.
For that. Yep. Thank you, Josh. And admittedly, it's a controversial visit. Not everyone mm-hmm. approves, of course, but it certainly is historic. It's the first time a sitting U.S. president has visited Cuba in almost a century.
Right. 88 years. And so this is quite an event, especially considering Cuba is so close to the United States. And if you look at all the times the president has visited Mexico and or Canada. And so this is, I hope it augurs for a different relationship based on a greater respect for human rights in Cuba.
Do you think that the president's tone on the human rights issue in Cuba is appropriate, or do you think that he is giving tacit approval to Cuba's known record of human rights violations by visiting Havana?
Well, I think you have to listen to his words, and particularly his words to the Cuban people, his words at the press conference, and the fact that people in Cuba now, although they're American journalists, are raising with Cuban authorities issues about their lack of freedoms. And everything the president is doing there in terms of reaching out to entrepreneurs, to meeting today with dissidents in Cuba, political dissidents, shows that he is committed to American values in Cuba, and that his visit there, or the very fact that he's meeting with Cuban authorities, does not mean or should not be interpreted that these are not important to the United States.
And for those listening that would just like to travel to Cuba, because that's mm-hmm. now an option, what's your advice there?
Well, it is easier now, because just before the visit, the White House announced that there had been a change in the rules for people going on people-to-people visits, which in the past had to be on an organized trip with a U.S. tour guide. And of course, this increased the cost quite a bit. Now, Americans who want to go on people-to-people or cultural visits can organize their own visits. It could be a group from Jacksonville that's interested in dance and would be able to visit dance performances or dance companies in Cuba, something like that.
Patricia in Atlantic Beach is with us. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm fine with trade because we do trade with other communist countries. And the one thing I would like President Obama to do is use more leverage to eliminate censorship of the internet and human rights for the people. But I take a different tack on President Obama saying our policy has been a failure. I don't think it has. I think that Castro continually said he didn't need the USA, that Cuba would trade with South America and China, Southeast Asia, Europe, and he would never need us. But after all these years and the poor people and the citizens of Cuba, they're living in poverty. Doctors are making $28 a month, and, you know, they're thrilled if they can own a refrigerator. I think that our policies proved to the Cuban people and to the Castros that they do need the U.S. And I think trade would just open that up more. And eventually, like your guest says, it's probably going to be another generation before they actually can get rid of the communist, you know, philosophies on their back. But I do think it will go away. Anyhow.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Patricia. She's right. The average Cuban lives on, including professionals like doctors, $20 a
right.
month.
It is really surprising. Cuba is the only country I've seen, and I've been in many countries in the world, which is, in terms of social indicators, education, health, a middle-class country. And yet the people live in great poverty. And many Cuban families survive and are able to put food on the table only because of the support they get from their relatives in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And the remittances have been loosened up too, haven't they? People can
yes.
send more money there now.
Well, and that's made a huge difference to families because that money goes directly to family members. It doesn't go to the government. And it has made all the difference for many families to improve their lives, to get by, to give a better life to their children.
And a few tweets coming into the show. Reminder, the embargo is not impacted. The trade deals are outside the scope of the embargo, tweets one listener. The embargo is still technically in place.
Well, and President Castro made that point that it is in place, although President Obama has gone about as far as he can administratively to loosen that. And of course, by legislation, certain things were already exempted, including agricultural products, telecommunications, and medical products.
And if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with retired diplomat John Caulfield about the president's historic visit to Cuba. We'll go to your tweets and Facebook comments in a moment. Feel free to comment on our Facebook page or call in at 549-2937. Eric is in Jacksonville. Hi, Eric. What are your thoughts?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. I am a second-generation Cuban-American. I actually went to Cuba in 2009 and had a fantastic trip where I got to meet several cousins of mine that I otherwise would never have met. And we went out one night in old Havana, and we're sitting at a bar and watching some Cuban music and things like that. And we all kind of just had a long conversation about what our situation was and how unfortunate it was that we didn't really know each other very well. And it really came down to 50 years old grudges that had nothing to do with us personally. And I just want to point out that, you know, when the United States or any organization or entity sticks their thumbs in their ears and says, I'm not just going to talk to you because I disagree with your way of life, it really has impact on family members and basically took my family and spread it into two different groups, those that were in Cuba and those that weren't in Cuba. So I think it's a good idea to at least maintain that communication and that openness and consider other people's perspectives, not just on the national stage, but on person-to-person contact. And just wanted to make that point.
Okay. Thanks, Eric.
Well, since 2009, President Obama introduced a policy that basically removed virtually all the limits on visits by Cuban Americans to family members. And Cuban Americans responded dramatically. 500,000 Cuban Americans visited Cuba last year. And the information they give about the United States to their relatives in Cuba totally undermines the propaganda that the Cuban government is constantly spewing out about what the U.S. is like. So I think this has had a very significant effect on changing the perception in Cuba of the United States and of the real problems in the relationship.
How would you, if you were able to do a real survey of the Cuban population, what would it reveal?
Well, it is interesting that the Washington Post did a survey in cooperation with some other organizations. And one of the things they found is that President Obama is the most popular political leader in Cuba, far more popular than either Fidel or Raul Castro. And certainly, based on my circumstantial information, I mean, that's accurate. He's a very popular figure. And that, Cuban citizens are definitely looking to a different relationship with the U.S.
Marilyn in St. Augustine. Hi, Marilyn. Good morning. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I just returned from Cuba a couple of days ago, and I was on a people-to-people tour, and we spent 5 nights in Havana. And what I saw there were the beginnings of small businesses where, like your former callers have said, where people sort of just put a board in the front of their doorway and are selling a few items. And then other areas that have developed quite a bit are the paladars, which started out as local restaurants or local homes opening themselves to feed visitors, and they have developed into what look like totally restaurants, just real restaurants, but they're actually owned by private enterprise. So I really saw things opening up, and I think the Cuban people really like the Americans. They were so happy to see us. They wanted to talk to us. We met with many, many dancers, senior citizens groups, community centers. We just had the greatest experiences, and I think there's a lot of excitement by locals to the opening up. But I also feel that they realize it's going to take time because they certainly don't have the infrastructure in any way to support a lot of people coming in from the U.S. And I do think it's so great that Americans can send them money because they do need this money. They live on free food enough for 3 weeks. After 3 weeks, it's up to them. They only make about $20 a month. They're living in a poverty that you wouldn't believe. So I really want the embargo to end, and I feel real strongly about this.
Thank you for that. It's interesting to hear from someone who just visited.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she's absolutely right in that the conditions in which ordinary Cubans live in are very difficult. And I wish that ending the embargo could solve that poverty. But I think, to be honest, the fundamental reason that Cuba has not developed economically is that it is wedded to a system that has proven to be a failure in terms of improving people's economic lives. It's a communist system. And that now you see the beginnings of Cubans allowed to form their own little businesses.
But no admission that the system didn't work.
No, in fact, from the Cuban rhetoric, these are just minor twitches of the system, but it needs a dramatic overhaul, and that's going to arrive, I think, even sooner than the political change.
549-2937. Lots of calls on Cuba right now. Ramey in Jacksonville. Hey, Ramey.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great, thanks.
Just wanted to mention a couple of things. First thing I wanted to say, even looking at my personal life, I've noticed that whenever we, even our enemies close, it ends up being good for us. You know, whenever you create conflict and disagreement with you in your personal life, or whether it's a political situation in our country, they always create a hostile environment which doesn't benefit anybody. So the more we pursue the policies that bring countries together, it would benefit us all. I mean, remember the time that China was out of the world and, you know, communist parties were out of the world. We wouldn't get all these products and services that we get through China, India, and different countries. Now Cuba is right next to our door, and just becoming friends with them is just common sense. I don't know why would anybody disagree with that. Also, I wanted to draw another point about the Republican Party and how they're disagreeing with presidents in regards to the situation. Remember, the Republican Party are completely disagree. I'm an Iranian, so I pay attention to Middle Eastern politics, and I know they completely support Saudi Arabia, which is a country which very barbaric. Woman doesn't do anything in that country. They can't even drive. They execute people in a high number. Yet we support them. We call them our allies. Yet Cubans, we talk about them as if they've done something horrible. They don't execute anybody. They don't promote violence. So I don't understand what conservatives thinking when they talking negatively about Cuban government, where they're for Saudi government. So I just wanted to make those 2 points. I take my answers. I listen over the radio. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Thanks, Ramey. John.
Well, there's a history to Cuba, and there is a history of after the revolution. Of course, people were executed, and Cuba imposed the most severe communist system of almost any country except for the Soviet Union, and people suffered. For example, they banned religion. Atheism mm-hmm. became a requirement of the state that children were taught in schools to be atheists. But over time, that has softened somewhat. It still remains an authoritarian regime. But I believe that this is a process that is irreversible, and that Cubans are going to have, in time, hopefully sooner rather than later, more individual freedoms as well as economic freedoms.
Here's a tweet related to that. Listener tweets the show, would detractors rather have Russia or China take the advantage over the U.S. when Cuba's economy cracks open? Eric on the West Side. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I'd like to address some of the criticisms of the Republican Party of Obama going to Cuba. The first one being that Cuba is a totalitarian regime. The United States does business with all kinds of totalitarian regimes. Saudi Arabia, China, just being a couple of examples. The second criticism is that Cuba is a human rights violator. Well, Israel is one of our best friends, and they are constantly in violation of UN sanctions for human rights, the way they deal with the Palestinians. And then finally, the people like Trump and Rubio said that this was a bad deal, that we didn't get anything out of it, which is absurd because now, the way the system is set up now, the United States is going to be the exclusive trading partner of Cuba. The Soviet Union's not, Russia's not there, China's not there, none of these other big powers are there. It's just the United States. So we're going to have an exclusive situation with them, which puts us in the driver's seat from a negotiating standpoint. So all these criticisms of Obama and his Cuba policy are, frankly, dishonest. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Thanks, Eric. What do you think about that?
Well, it's interesting that Cuba policy does not break along straight party lines like a number of other issues. We have Democrats who are very critical of the president's decision. We have Republicans, of course. Even among the presidential candidates on the Republican side, candidate Trump has said that he's basically supportive of this, but he would have gotten a better deal. And others have been
criticized.
I can't
help but laugh at this. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I mean, just saying this is not your typical partisan issue. And I think after the elections, there's probably an excellent chance that with bipartisan support that there will be a bill to end the sanctions.
What about that caller's points on other nations? Is this on the level historically of the same import as when Nixon went to China?
Well, in a way it is because of the symbolism of this. However, China is a much more important country than Cuba. Cuba is close to us. There is a cultural history there that we have with Cuba that's important. But I think the overall consequences to the U.S. and the world of a Cuba-U.S. Normalization will not be as great as it was with China.
Kyle is on the road from Gainesville. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hi. I think it's great, somewhat great. You know, I'm not big with U.S. relations and communist countries. There's still a bar to set that they're still a communist country. It's just kind of scary too, as well. But my grandma is Cuban, and so it is in my blood. I don't know anything about Cubans or anything about down there. I had a few questions, and I'm kind of nervous. I've never really been on the air.
Oh, don't worry about it. You're doing great.
Well, thank you very much. I'm 28 years old. So I think I come from a generation that it's important for us as 28-year-olds and 25-year-olds to go out and vote, which we're not. And it's kind of a hard situation here in Florida because I know a lot of people in Jacksonville that are my age, over 100 people to be exact, that don't vote. They don't. They won't go out and vote. They don't think the ballot system is efficient. They think it's rigged. There's all these things, and I think a lot of it is labeled from Facebook and some other certain, social media, like areas where they're telling people, I wouldn't vote, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like the same with religion and so on.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
And it is going to be a complicated theory getting America and Cuba's relations set to a ball where we are comfortable with going down there and traveling and feeling safe. It's going to be a lot different. I don't know.
I'm sure you're right, Kyle. Thanks for the call. Paul in Flagler Beach. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm on my cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. Great show. I'm listening to it. I've been watching Cuba, planning on taking my daughter down soon. So I've just been looking at both sides, and the question I keep coming up with, or the thought I keep coming up with, maybe we need to look at our own human rights values and economic values, and maybe we ought to look at the first 56 years of the United States and all of the atrocities we had. How long did we condone slavery? And what would a revolution look like after a brutal dictatorship like Batista was? So we're being awful critical of a system that seems to be working pretty well, even though we're dragging it down. Maybe the embargo is just so we're just mad because we can't go down and exploit Cuba.
Thanks, Paul.
That's
Okay, thank you. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. John Caulfield, go ahead.
Well, of course, in the United States, there's a lot to criticize, and we can criticize it. And that's our system. That's our values. It's only through being able to speak out and for a gentleman like our caller to say things aren't right here, things need to improve, that things get better, that we overcome the errors of the past like slavery. But when you have a system that says you're not allowed to criticize the government, you're not allowed to challenge it, then you're stuck with simply what the leaders say is going to be the way. And in a subtle way, I think that's what President Obama was trying to do with that press conference, to say, look, you know, leaders have to be able to answer questions to the public, even if they disagree with them, and even if those questions are impolite at times.
It will be fascinating to see and listen to the speech coming up in less than a half an hour. We'll carry that. In the meantime, John, thanks so much for your incredible insights this morning.
All right. Thank you very much, Melissa. Enjoyed your calls.
John Caulfield is a retired American diplomat and former chief of mission with the U.S. Interest Section in Havana. President Obama will address the Cuban people this morning. We will carry live coverage of that speech right here on 89.9 as soon as First Coast Connect wraps up at 10 o'clock. Well, later, how you can help local kids battling a serious illness realize their dreams. We'll tell you about dreams come true. But up next, timely tips on filing your taxes this season. Back in a moment. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross. Well, your donations make WJCT possible. That's why we come to you for a week each spring and ask you to pledge. We want to shorten that time and reach our goal early. So now's the time to give. Do it now by dialing 353-9528 or make your donation online at WJCT.org.
Recent low oil prices haven't meant good news for everyone. For workers in the oil-rich Scottish city of Aberdeen, it's actually bringing boatloads of bad news.
I think it's shocked a lot of people that it's happened so quickly and so dramatically. I certainly did not expect it to be this, you know, brutal and aggressive, and that's really has shocked me.
I'm Molly Wood. What happened to Aberdeen? That's next time on Marketplace from APM.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT for a special sneak preview of Ken Burns' Jackie Robinson documentary, Sunday, April 3rd, in the Virginia Room in the Ringhaver Student Center of Flagler College. The film depicts the life and accomplishments of baseball legend and civil rights pioneer Jack Roosevelt Robinson, who fearlessly crossed baseball's color line and continued fighting discrimination after his baseball career ended. Reception begins at 3 with screening and discussion to follow. This event is free, but registration is required. Info at wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, hard to believe, but April 15th is just around the corner. Yes, time to pay Uncle Sam. Whether you file through TurboTax or hire an expert, you really need to have your ducks in a row at tax time. Andrew Poulos is here to help us with that right now. He's an accountant and financial consultant, and he's on the line now with some very timely filing tips for your tax return. Andrew, good to talk to you.
Thanks, Melissa, for having me.
And you can check out Andrew's website, by the way, at savvytaxdie.com. So first off, we're just a few weeks away from the deadline. What are the five things people need to know this year as they file their taxes?
Well, of course, at this point, I would always say to get started early, but we're in the heart of the tax season right now, so there is no such thing starting early. But certainly starting early, being organized, that's always the most important thing. If you go in to get your taxes done and you're missing some of your documents, that's just going to slow down the process and put you under the gun and have even more stress as you get closer to the April deadline. A very important thing that people should kind of be aware of, look for someone who's knowledgeable and reputable. Don't just go out there and go with the cheapest person. You don't know what you're getting. And there's a lot of just scams and fraud and crooks out there this year that are looking to get your identity and sell it off or commit tax fraud. So you got to be very careful with who you're going to use.
Mm-hmm, sure. Isn't it important, too, to be aware of certain tax credits this year? That there are so many out there, and people don't really realize what they can claim and get access to.
Absolutely. Those, and people need to realize that a tax credit is different than a tax deduction. A tax deduction is only going to give you reduce your tax liability. So if you owe $50,000 in income and you have a deduction of $1,000, then your taxable income is $49,000. A tax credit is actually giving you a dollar for dollar credit in a reduction of your taxes. Some of the tax credits that are out there that people sometimes just miss is education credits. If you have children, you might qualify for child and dependent care credits if you've paid child care expenses. Residential energy property credits. So if you've done energy efficiency repairs to your home, new windows, a new roof, any insulation, maybe a water heater, that might qualify as for a residential energy credit. So you could get, you know, a couple hundred dollars in property credits there. If you contribute to a retirement account, you might qualify for the savers credit. So there's certainly some good credits out there that people should be aware of.
Now, people always end up, as you said, if they don't get their ducks in a row early, they have to file extensions. They may not meet the deadline. Is it right that the IRS will actually revoke your passport now if you don't get your business done?
Well, it's they won't revoke your passport for filing an extension or filing later in the year. What they will do is they'll revoke your passport potentially if you owe over $50,000 in taxes and you don't get on some sort of a payment plan, you don't get your affairs taken care of. So for folks, and there's a lot of people out there with the economy, the recession we've had the last 8-9 years, there's a lot of people who are kind of just out in limbo and haven't taken care of things. They're frustrated, stressed. They have bigger problems to worry about than taxes, perhaps. But if you have taxes outstanding, if you haven't filed taxes in 3, 4, 5 years, that needs to be taken care of because these new regulations that Congress passed in early December of 2015, they do allow the IRS to pretty much start looking at folks who owe more than $50,000 and be able to revoke or deny your passport.
And with the advent of the Affordable Care Act, now the law of the land, once again this year, it was upheld by the Supreme Court. Is there anything related to that legislation people need to know about as they prepare their tax returns?
Yeah, certainly this is the year where we are getting into the Affordable Care Act requirements, where we have to basically provide verification that we were insured last year. So this is just kind of the messy area this year, which is delaying a lot of tax returns from being filed. But folks need to be aware that when they go to get their taxes done, they need, as part of their documentation, they should have either 1095A, B, or C. So it depends on how you had health insurance last year. If you did, you'll either receive in the mail a 1095A from the marketplace, B or C from the employer or the insurance company. But that's required because this is how we determine basically if that person should get penalized, whether you had insurance the entire year or partial year. So not having that is just going to delay your tax filing.
Okay. And then lastly, you mentioned if you hire an accountant, get started early and pick a really reputable one. But what advice do you have for people that just want to use online tax software and do it themselves?
I mean, certainly that's always an option for folks. And it just depends. I always say that it depends. I'm in favor for people saving money in tax preparation fees. If your return is fairly simple, meaning you have a W-2 or a couple W-2s, you don't have anything too complex, certainly you can do it online using one of the online tax softwares. When you start getting into, Melissa, into further, more complex returns, you have where you're trading stocks or you have rental properties, you have a home, basically, where you might qualify for some credits or itemized deductions. At that point, you need to kind of ask yourself, do you do it yourself, which is still an option, or do you hire someone who knows what they're doing that's looking out for your best interest to try to get you the biggest refund or minimize your liability as much as possible? So you just need to analyze, and it's going to be on a case-by-case basis for everyone.
Great advice, Andrew. Thanks so much for giving us your insights. It's that time of year, so we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Melissa.
Andrew Poulos is an accountant and financial consultant. You can learn more at his website. It's SavvyTaxGuy.com. And we're back in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, the secret history of cyber war. We talk with journalist Fred Kaplan about his new book, Dark Territory, which includes the story of how cybersecurity policy was affected when President Reagan watched the 1983 Matthew Broderick film, War Games. We'll also talk about the battle between Apple and the FBI. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Britta Yunga signed up with a group that said it was investing in poor countries. She says the money was going in the opposite direction.
We hired local planes to transport the local currency every week.
You rented airplanes to carry cash?
Yes.
That's on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's time to give. When you donate now to WJCT, you're supporting all of your favorite public radio programming, and you're also helping us shorten our pledge drive. Our promise to you is we'll end this fundraiser as soon as we hit our $80,000 goal. Plus, the earlier you give, the better your chances of winning in our prize drawings. The early bird may get an iPad. Learn more by visiting WJCT.org or by calling 904-353-9528.
Welcome back. Well, one area of healthcare on the First Coast that can sometimes be under the radar is the group that supports children battling life-threatening illnesses. Dreams Come True Jacksonville is funded 100% by community donations, and it's dedicated to bringing hope and joy throughout this medical journey to children by fulfilling their dreams. All dollars stay local to realize dreams for local kids. Now, the organization is kicking off its 2016 Dream Campaign, and they've got an ambitious goal to raise funds for 75 dreamers or kids. Here to tell us more, Executive Director Sherry Criswell and dreamer Ryan Troutman. Good morning to you
both.
Good
morning.
Morning.
Thanks so much for being with us. Sherry, in a moment, all about this campaign for Dreams Come True. But first, Ryan, you suffered a traumatic brain injury back in 2007, and it changed your life. Can you tell us what happened and how Dreams Come True has helped you?
Yeah. So I was, my friend and I and his brother, we were 16 years old, and we drove downtown to see a music concert. And coming home, we were driving at a high speed, and I was ejected from the vehicle, and I hit the ground headfirst and received a traumatic brain injury. I had to go through the trauma centers and rehabilitation clinics, had to relearn my name, how to walk, talk, eat,
wow.
Sleep,
start
think.
All over again.
Yeah, from the start. And, throughout the entire journey, Dreams Come True gave me one really special day. They picked me up in a limousine and took me on a shopping spree. And I got to spend time with my family. It was really the one day out of that year that I didn't have to worry about my life-threatening condition mm-hmm. or have serious conversations with my parents. Instead, I could really just spend quality time and love and laugh.
You know, Sherry, hearing Ryan's story gives everyone an idea of what you're trying to do. Help a lot more kids.
Absolutely.
Tell us about this campaign.
Well, Ryan's story is one of 3,500 stories that we've been able to provide throughout the course of our 32-year history. And we are looking to provide 75 dreams over the course of the next few months for our local children who are like Ryan and battling a life-threatening condition. And so we're seeking support. If we can get 75 dreams underwritten at about an average cost of $3,000 per dream, we're looking for community partners to help us accomplish that.
And the dreams can be all kinds of things.
Absolutely. It could be a shopping spree like Ryan's, or it could be a trip. We do Hawaii dreams and cruises in Alaska. We did a train dream. They can dream it. We try to provide it.
What a great job you have putting smiles on kids' faces.
It absolutely
is. It's really touching. And it does, as you said, people listening, whether it's an individual or a business, they could fund one dream for about $3,000. That's
absolutely
not an inordinate amount of money to make this happen.
Sure, and you can do it in any number of ways, just through a corporate gift or by raising funds through a dream team, or like Ryan is doing now through the sale of his book that he's written.
Yes, let's talk about that quickly. You wrote a book about your journey called Second Chance.
Yes. So I wrote, for my accident happened 9 years ago, And every time I tell my story, someone says, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. Mm-hmm. And I've tried so many times, you know, and I finally buckled down and really was able to accomplish that goal. It's going to be published here in the United States in the coming weeks. And my website, ryantrautman.com, has more information on that. But yeah, I'm looking to make a portion of all my book sales donate to Dreams Come True to create better dreams for children today.
That's Second Chance by Ryan Trautman coming out soon. And if you want to help Dreams Come True with their 2016 Dream Campaign, just go to their website, dreamscometrue.org. Get involved. And thanks so much, both of you, for being with us.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. Again, that was Sherry Criswell of Dreams Come True and dreamer Ryan Trautman. And finally this hour, the music of your life is coming to 89.9 every single night. Beginning April 1st, Relax Radio will be on 89.9 FM. No April Foolin'. David Luckin is here to tell us all about it. Of course, you and Sean Birch created Relax Radio, and it has been a hit from the start, David.
As we approach our year's anniversary, we're going to make this available to everyone. We're going to make this on, put it on 89.9 midnights every night. You'll have a place to go to kind of relax and relive the memories, because there's all kinds of music here from Bing Crosby to a track from Taylor Swift's new album. So we've got a nice variety. Sean's got a couple queued up. I think we've got Jack Johnson, maybe.
Yeah, so we'll listen to a little music while we talk about Relax, which has always been on our HD3 channel since you created it. But for people that don't have an HD radio, they can now relax on regular radio, which is so exciting.
Insomniacs are rejoicing all across the First Coast.
Exactly.
Now you got a place to go, and as I said, it's all kinds of music. Here's a little Jack Johnson. If I could, you know that I would now. If only I could, you know that I would now. From Bing Crosby to Jack Johnson, Frank Sinatra.
And that's the genius of David Luckin, because this has filled a gap in the market when the Jones College Radio easy listening format retired or sunsetted. You saw an opportunity to reach that audience. But what you've done that I love so much is you've got the Great American Songbook Standards as part of the playlist, but you've also got music of the 70s, I hate to say this, but the 70s, yeah, 80s, and
oldies.
Today, you have a little bit of everything on this playlist.
There is, and I was thinking coming in, if you're a serious radio listener, if you think of Seriously Sinatra, 60s on 6, and real jazz, we've kind of combined those three genres. So for baby boomers like me who grew up with jazz and the oldies and the Great American Songbook, it's the perfect destination. Here's a little Sade behind us now, Smooth Operator. So it takes you from literally the 40s to the 80s, with the bulk of it being, you know, 60s, easy listening music and nice music.
And this is 7 nights a week, beginning at midnight every night, starting April 1st on 89.9 FM. It is the widespread debut of Relax Radio. So exciting.
We are very excited, and over 3,000 songs in rotation and growing.
Now, last but not least, speaking of songs in rotation, The Electro Lounge, your program, is always debuting some new music, and you've got one to talk about as we close the show.
Yeah, a brand new album from a group called Zuzu Electric, The Hopper. There's a big neo-swing movement going on in Europe right now, as it does about every 10 years, and this is a great example of taking old-style jazz and making it danceable.
First even Savoy, I saw you on the floor, black and white, jumping high, all eyes on you, I'm passing by. Suddenly you took my hand, sway me around, eye to eye, firefly, fly.
That's Nelly Simon, the singer and songwriter, along with Jürgen Kosman, the producer and musician of one of the founders of the label Chin Chin Records out of Germany. They're also the nice folks who produced our Electro Lounge 10th anniversary CD, so we've got a special place in our heart for these folks. But as you can hear, they just take the old sounds and make them modern, and it's just fun, nice music.
It's always great music spinning in the Electro Lounge. Tune in every night at 9, and beginning April 1st, If you're up late, you want to turn on 89.9 FM for Relax Radio 7 nights a week.
Thanks, Melissa. Electro Lounge, 9 o'clock tonight, 8 Central.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast of the show on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show video on demand now at tvjax.com. Up next, stay tuned for special coverage of President Obama's speech to the Cuban people and analysis from NPR News. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.